Peter, don't despair about the 13% of 16 and 17-year-olds voting for the health districts. Not too long ago, we had a mayoral race in Miami-Dade, and we had 13% of everybody showing up for the mayor of Miami-Dade, so y'all are doing pretty well. Good afternoon, and thank y'all for having me. I'm Lucas Holler, Assistant Professor of Public Health at Nova Southeastern University, and I'd like to identify Dr. Ciro Blavo. He's one of the co-authors of the study. In addition to being a full professor, he's also the director of the program and involved in pediatrics in the College of Medicine as well, and he's our global health professor, additionally. Ms. Rashida Shaw is currently presenting a poster, so she was not able to make it today. But anyway, today I'm here to talk to you about comparing the perceptions of and experiences in the health insurance systems of Canada, France, United Kingdom, and the United States of America. During this point, I'd like to let you know I have no vested interest in this. Additionally, here's what we seek to accomplish today. What do we want to get out of this conversation? Well, first, identify unique characteristics of the healthcare insurance systems of Canada, France, UK, and the United States. Second, having identified them, compare and contrast the perceptions and experiences of respondents of each country relative to healthcare quality, affordability, access, and wait times, four themes that we decided to pull from the data set we're using. And then lastly, critically assess the applicability of the study results to health policy development, which we'll find to be an interesting job to have to accomplish. In order to accomplish these objectives, we're going to follow the following agenda. First, just sort of an introduction and context of what it is we're talking about. A quick review of alternative health insurance systems, sort of like the Cliff Notes version, I would say. Then an overview of the countries that we selected to study and their models. And then lastly, we'll finish off with the methodology and a discussion of the results. And then we'll try to have some sort of discussion about, so what does all of this mean? That being said, currently, in wake of all of our discussions of health care reform and the passage of ACA, alternative health insurance systems have been of great importance and interest to people, whether it be in current events, politics, for us, health policy and health administration. And during this time of discourse in America, the Commonwealth Fund published in 2010 its International Health Policy Survey, in which from, I believe, March of 2010 to June 2010, they surveyed individuals from 11 countries about their perceptions of their country's health insurance systems. Now, this is going to be sort of a theme that runs throughout our conversation today, and it will be accented at the end, where, keep in mind, the survey is not of population data. It's of people's perceptions of living within their health insurance systems. Our particular study that we're talking about today focused on four of the countries from the Commonwealth Health Fund survey, each illustrating a different approach to organizing, financing, and administering healthcare. So, here's the Cliff Notes version, right? So, first, we have the Bismarck model of health provision, wherein you have universal coverage, it's paid for by employee-employer contributions, it's government-regulated, strongly government-regulated, however, surprisingly enough to some of us, it's private insurers and private providers, even though it's universal healthcare. All right, now, that being said, the private insurers are nonprofits and charity organizations, but nevertheless, private organizations. Examples you see here would be France, Japan, Germany, there's several more, but here's some quick ones to tick off. Now, similar in coverage, but different in approach, is the beverage model. You still have universal coverage, but instead of it being employer-employee contributions, it's tax-based. Therefore, it becomes government-financed and government-managed. In this case, you have government providers with a private sector as well, but the majority would be in the public sphere, particularly within the hospital systems. And here we have examples being UK, Spain, and Italy. And then last on this slide, we have the national health insurance model. Once again, universal coverage. Once again, tax-based. But the neat twist here is it's government-managed, but with private providers. Examples here would be Canada, South Korea, and Taiwan. So it's really interesting, for example, it wasn't that long ago that I was unaware of these models myself, so it's really neat to be confronted as an American to see these alternative systems where, wait a minute, there are private practitioners. There are private providers, and there's even private insurers involved in universal care. So it opens our eyes to other alternatives other than just what we're used to here. what we're used to here, we're calling a mixed model. Some could call it an out-of-pocket model, but the reason that we focused on calling it a mixed model is because here in the States, you have just about everything. You have group coverage or you have individual coverage. If you're not lucky enough to get either of those, you don't have any coverage. How do we finance it? Well, employer-employee contributions. We also have a tax system. We pay taxes that go to fund other people within our society's health care. In addition to that, sometimes you have to pay out of pocket. I had the joy of being a PhD student, and as I was writing my dissertation, I was registered for the amount of hours that you needed to be registered to dissertate. But apparently our school's school insurance program decided that although that's full-time for a PhD student in that given moment, it's not full-time according to their rules. And of course, I made the mistake of doing some mixed martial arts at the time and got my ribs crunched, and that's when I was told, wait a minute, you only have three credits to your registration, you do not have health insurance. So that becomes an out-of-pocket pretty quickly. That being said, there's anywhere from minimal to substantial government regulation, depending on what part of the population you occupy. And lastly, when it comes to provision, we have both private and public providers. Now, when it comes to examples of this system, if you include Medicare, Medicaid, military, and federal employee coverage in Veterans Affairs, the U.S. But if you take out the government programs, if you take out Medicaid, Medicare, and VA, then our examples would be the U.S., Cambodia, India, and Egypt. So a quick overview of the four countries that we've selected from the survey to look at, once again illustrating the different models that we've identified, is France will be standing in for Bismarck today, wherein they have universal coverage, and once again it's paid for through payroll deduction, and it's highly government regulated. The government and the physicians hassle out how much different services are going to cost, and then it's put into law, and that's what is going to be charged no matter what. You walk into the physician's office, there's a detailed list of prices on the wall. A shot is $15.23, obviously convert that to euros, what have you. And once again, the insurers are non-government, non-profit agencies. There's approximately 14 of them. There's some smaller that come in as well. And lastly, private providers. This is based on fees for service as well. So once again, as far as comparing the U.S. system to these alternative systems, there's a similarity there for some of the ways we do things. Now, the U.K., on the other hand, with the beverage model, once again, universal coverage, but taxation. High taxes to cover the beloved NHS. That wasn't sarcasm. They really love the NHS. Here we have government managed, and the insurer is the central government, and you have both public and private providers, but once again, for example, of course, Peter's going to correct me probably in a second, but my understanding is in the hospital systems, everybody is a public employee. And then the primary care, general practitioners, you have a mix of public and private. However, you do have the option for private insurance in order to gain access to private facilities or pay for services that aren't covered by the NHS plan. And in the UK system, it's based on capitation versus fees for service. And then Canada, we have the national health insurance model, still universal coverage, still taxation. What's interesting here, though, is I remember growing up in my high school days, and I was in the punk scene, and we were all, for some reason, chose to really be big on single-payer system. We were like 17. I don't know if we really knew what single-payer was, really. But we always looked up to Canada and said, look at how they do it. Well, technically speaking, it's not really single-payer because there's 13 provinces, and they actually all have a say in the way they do their own system. So it's administered by the provinces. The insurer is the central and provincial governments. They have a similar system. You might have heard of their system, Medicare. Turns out we borrowed that from them, both idea and name. So the central government plays a role, but the provinces have some contributions to it as well. And lastly, we have private providers. And again, we have the opportunity for private insurance if one cares for it in order to cover dental and, believe it or not, prescriptions, despite the fact that the Canadians get to benefit from low-cost prescription medicine in the first place, and supplemental services. Here in the U.S., once again, our mixed model depends on what your place in life, whether or not you get group, individual, or no coverage. It's a mix of everything. Insurers, for-profit companies, non-profit, federal, state governments, private, public providers. Y'all are pretty familiar with the U.S. system, perhaps. All right. So what we did is we looked at the 2010 Commonwealth Fund International Health Policy Survey, And the population that they sampled from were adults age 18 and older. The sample size for the respondents in the countries that we're looking at, approximately 3,000 for Canada, 1,000 for France, 1,500 for UK, and 2,500 for the United States. What we did is, to make something substantive and relevant for today's conversation, we looked at basically four themes that were identified within the survey, composed of 10 overall variables. I'm going to get into the variables specifically later, so I'll just go through the themes. What we're looking at is systems, views, and confidence, as in what do respondents think about the systems they live in, generally speaking, and second, how confident are they of receiving effective care. Second theme, affordability and cost-related barriers. Third theme, access to needed care and wait times, because there's multiple barriers that we typically think of, one being money, one being time. And then lastly, primary care and patient-centered care. For the quant kids in the class today, we were using a Kruskal-Wallis test to look for differences in the four independent samples that we have and with ordinal variables. And for our nominal variables, we used Goodman-Kruskal. Okay, so that being said, for the theme systems using confidence, one of the variables in the survey asked respondents, so, tell us about your system. Do you only need minor changes to make it better? Does it need fundamental changes, or should you just rebuild it completely? Based on the responses here, if you look to the Kruskal-Wallis test on the right, you see that we have statistical significance. Just so you know, on the means rank, Kruskal-Wallis, what it does is it doesn't look at mean scores since we're dealing with ordinal variables. We look at ranks, and then it takes mean ranks from the different individual respondents and comes up with a list. So to interpret that, if you look down at the United States, you see a mean rank of 4,991 versus United Kingdom's 3,172. What that's telling you is that several respondents in the U.S. were ranking, we need more change in our system, and fewer people in the UK were saying we need substantial change in our system. So the downside of the Kruskal-Wallis test is, although we can say that there's a significant difference, we cannot exactly say where that difference exists. One could interpret very easily, there's a clear difference between the United States and the United Kingdom, but is there a difference between the United States and, say, Canada? We have to do more work on that to know exactly for sure. For example, if we had nice quantitative, interval level data, we could do a Nova Bonferroni and identify that, but we didn't have that. Moving on to systems using confidence, the second variable is involved, asking how confident are you that you receive the most effective treatment if seriously ill? Once again, a statistically significant difference between the four countries. 70% of the respondents in the United States saying, yeah, I'm confident I'll receive effective care if I'm ill, versus the UK saying 92% saying I'll receive effective care. So, keep in mind that you'll see Canada and France typically will be kind of sharing the middle slots through these variables until we get to time. But I won't let you know. You have to wait. Find out who has to wait longest. As far as being confident to be able to afford the needed care, once again, statistical difference. Here, the UK tops out, 90%. Oh, yeah, I'll be able to afford it. It's free. You'll get most of what you need. Meanwhile, in the United States, 58.1% said that they'll be able to get it. Now, as far as affordability and cost-related access barriers, one of the questions asked a number of questions, and it was addressing affordability and cost-related barriers, asking respondents, did you not fill a prescription or skip doses? Had you had a problem but not visit your doctor from financial reasons? Did you skip a test or a treatment or a follow-up? And then obviously they also had the yes to all of the above. We were working on the yes to all of the above. And in this case, we found a significant difference once again with 33% of the respondents from the U.S. saying yes to at least one of the above, whereas only 5% from the U.K. Once again, Canada and France coming out in around the middle. And then lastly for this one, serious problem paying bills or inability to pay bills. Again, you can see a pretty big difference between the respondents from the different nations. Now, as far as how much one's paying out-of-pocket medical costs, the respondents had an option to pay $200 or less, $1,000 or more, and the option of no response at all. Once again, we now are in ordinal level data, so look at the means rank to look for the way they stack up. The people that had the lowest out-of-pocket costs were the UK. The people with the highest out-of-pocket costs were the United States. Access to needed care and wait times. I've waited long enough. Let's see who has to wait the longest. Well, Canada has been notorious for its wait times there. They, over the years, they've been working very hard to do something about that. At the time of this survey, 2010, the respondents' feelings were still such that, you know, they had to wait. The options the respondents had available to them was same or next day appointment, or had to wait 6 days or more. In this case, Canada comes in at the longest wait, with the UK being the shortest wait. And then us and France are kind of in the middle. Wait times for a specialist, in this case, the U.S. does very well. In the U.S., it shows the lowest wait time, with Canada, once again, coming in for the longest wait time to see a specialist. Now, when it comes to being worried that a medical problem took too long to be diagnosed, this was just a yes-no question, so we're back into the nominal level data. We have here the United Kingdom with only 8%, meanwhile, once again, Canada, 21%. But now we can quit beating up on Canada for a while, and we can, you know, start moving in on other people. Interestingly enough here, regular this was interesting because I'm going to bring up something from an American economist in a little while, but just as a foretaste of the feast to come. In America, we typically complain about how we're rushed into our office, our doctor's office, and rushed out. Well, it turns out, actually, all in all, we're pretty happy with the services we receive. Here, the response were asked, my doctor always gives me opportunity to ask questions about recommended treatment, explains things in a way that's easy to understand, involves as much as you want in care decisions, and spends enough time with you. And for people that said yes to all of the above, the United States actually came out with 63% versus France and the United Kingdom coming in at 59% approximately. And although this was closer than some of our other variables we looked at, it was still statistically significant. Now, as far as people feeling as though, once again, keep in mind this is perceptions, feeling as though quality of care was excellent, we had the UK coming in at 79.1%, and France coming in at 67.1%. Keep that one in mind. Feeling as though quality of care was excellent. All right, so what do we glean from this? Well, evidently, no particular system entirely satiates citizens' interests. That American economist I was telling you about, this might be cliche by now, but it's still fun, so I figured I'd share it with you. Sung Mei Chen has identified the universal laws of healthcare systems. One, no matter how good the healthcare is in a particular country, people will complain about it. Two, no matter how much money is spent on healthcare, the doctors and hospitals will argue that it is not enough. And lastly, the last reform always failed. So with that as sort of providing a context for us to think about the discussion here, what I would like to point out is the potential disconnect between respondents' perceptions and the finding of studies based on population data. Remember in our previous slide, the nation of the four that came in with the lowest percent agreement saying I will receive the most effective care was France, despite France being the number one nation identified by the World Health Organization's ranking of the best healthcare systems in the world. Even with the criticism of that survey, that stands out because the same is also true in the Commonwealth Fund multinational comparisons of health systems data in 2006. Which, once again, isn't based on perceptions, but based on population data. Another takeaway from this, is this even a fair conversation to be having in the first place? Have I just duped y'all into listening to this, and then at the very end told you, all right, forget everything because it's not a fair comparison? I don't know. You can make that decision for yourself. But if you think about it, it is a problematic comparison due to the health insurance systems and noteworthy dissimilarities between the assumptions. We have yet to assume in America that healthcare is a right. We do not share that sentiment. Therefore, our goals for healthcare are substantially different than the goals of the nations we're being compared to in this moment. The way it's organized, resultantly, is different. The way we pay for it, resultantly, is different, and so is the delivery. Does this give the U.S., for those of us that would be more interested in a universal plan that's, you know, government-regulated and or run, blah, 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 does this give the U.S. a pass in making these comparisons or not? Once again, y'all be able, one of the objectives was for us to be able to critically, you know, assess that. So leave it for you to make that decision. But nonetheless, the issue remains is that different health insurance systems accomplish different ends. And, just as in other policy arenas, public policy and law typically reflects the culture and values of the population that creates the laws. I had the pleasure of teaching government in the state of Texas in a small rural town in East Texas, and of course my students were all about the death penalty, and they were convinced that the death penalty reduced violent homicide. But if you look at the rates of violent homicide across the country, Texas has some of the highest. Meanwhile, Vermont, which doesn't have capital punishment, has some of the lowest. What does that mean? Well, it just means a violent culture has violent laws. Now, that's something to think about, but when it comes to, I made a presentation earlier today about sex education. Some organizations, some states and districts choose to have it, some don't. And it's a value statement. Do we want to educate people about something, or do we want them to remain, more in the values side of things? So that's something to keep in mind when we look at health insurance systems as well. So that being said, this is what we give the policymakers and administrators to take and try to apply to the particular development and change of their own health systems. Thank you very much.